I have to take time out to smell the flowers. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. I welcome you with all my heart. It's good to be with you again. Always try to remember that satsang is not a lecture. Satsang is being. Being with the self, the reality of all existence. It has absolutely nothing to do with a sermon or a talk. Just by being, you can overcome all your problems and become the real person you are. Just being, not being here or being there, just being yourself. Satsang is being. What do you think you are? When I say being, you identify with birth, with existence, going through life, hurrying, scurrying, trying to make things happen. Trying to overcome your so-called problems, searching for a better life. You're doing the wrong thing. What you should be doing is letting go of everything you've ever believed, perceived, conceptualized. Becoming like a little child. Watching the world and not reacting to it. Observing and inquiring who is the observer. Never coming to any conclusion. No beginning, no end. Not comparing. Not analyzing, not judging, just being. When you are just being, you are the self. When you are being this and being that, you are your humanhood. When you are your humanhood, you identify with the world and you go through the vicissitudes of life, having problems, trying to solve them, having opinions, being judgmental, concerning yourself with others say or what others do. As long as you're doing these things, you can never really know what spiritual life is. Spiritual life is being empty, totally empty. No opinions. No beliefs. It is only when you become empty that you become fulfilled. You're not trying to add on new knowledge to what you already have. You're not trying to learn some mystical way of becoming self-realized. You're not really trying to do anything to find liberation. You're merely letting go of everything you've ever had. If something is bothering you or annoying you during the day, during the night, no matter how justified you may feel, you have the problem. It makes no difference what anybody else is doing. As long as you feel hurt, as long as you feel slighted, as long as you feel doubtful, apprehensive, you must realize it's the me, the personal I, that feels this way. People ask me, what is the reason, what is the purpose of becoming liberated? Why can't I just live a hedonistic existence, enjoying everything on this earth? Why should I become liberated? That's an interesting question. There's really no answer for you. Have to feel something in your own heart to cause a change to come upon you. You shouldn't believe anything I say. I can only confess my own experience. I share my life with you. Yet that's my experience. What is your experience? What are you going through? Trying to become something is the first mistake you make. Trying to overcome your problems is the second mistake you make. Even trying to understand reality is a mistake. the only thing left to do is to let go of everything else you've got. Your fears, your frustrations, your concepts, your ideas, your ego. Everything must be given up. There's absolutely nothing to gain. There's absolutely nothing to gain due to the fact that you are that already. Wherever you go in the world, whatever teacher you may fall upon, whatever book you may read, whatever teaching you may discover, is really to no avail. Until you decide to give up everything you're holding on to. And that hurts. Yet that's exactly what you have to do. You have to give up your so-called pleasures. Say your pleasures are drinking, smoking pot, doing all those good things. All those things are doing for you is making you a little high. And as you know, when you come out of it, you feel worse than you ever felt. Now you have to give up also your love for trees, for flowers, for life itself. Due to the fact that whatever you hold on to keeps you earthbound. When you think about liberation, moksha, freedom, bliss, absolute reality, this is your state beyond your addictions. As long as you're doing things to make a better life for yourself in the world, you can never know reality. Yet you may ask, and rightly so, you mean I shouldn't care about my job, my family, my love for flowers or for mountains or for rivers? I shouldn't care for any of these things? Mentally, you shouldn't. Your body will continue to do what it does and will feel better doing it. Everything is given up mentally. When everything is given up mentally, your vasanas, your habits, the things that have held on to you for so long will automatically break loose and you will find freedom. As an example, many people ask me, Robert, you go to the movies sometimes, you watch TV sometimes, you read a paper sometimes, you like to enjoy the ocean sometimes. How come? If truth is your reality, if you were truly consciousness, you would be self-contained. And you wouldn't care to do these things. Who asked this question? The Ayani or the Yani? When the Yani appears to be doing something, nothing is really being done. There's just an appearance of doership. The doer has been destroyed. You're seeing your dream. You are observing your own consciousness, where you're at this time. Naturally, you're going to see everything external to you the same as where you are in consciousness right now. So when you see the Yani enjoying himself or not enjoying himself, it's all the same for the Yani. The Yani can sit in a room day in and day out, and if no one brings him food, it doesn't matter, because there are no thoughts about those things. The Yani can go to the movies and enjoy the picture, yet it doesn't matter. There are no thoughts about these things. The Yani can be in a so-called human hell or a so-called human heaven. It's all the same. It is the Ayani that sees the suffering, that identifies with conditions and judges accordingly. But the Yani knows that all is consciousness. Nobody dies, nobody is born, nobody suffers, nobody enjoys, nobody goes through any experience whatsoever. Yet the average person cannot see this. They can only see themselves, where they're at. And all they do most of their life is react to conditions. Therefore, if one vehemently makes up their mind that they want to become realized, they must begin to give up mentally all their judgments, their observations, their conclusions. They must become simple. The apparent life will take care of itself. It doesn't need any help from you. There's nothing you have to do in this world. Your body, which appears to be the doer, will take care of itself. It will take care of itself because it doesn't exist. It appears to exist, what appears to exist will always take care of itself. It doesn't need any help from you. When the body goes through experiences, it has nothing to do with the consciousness. It is like hypnosis, like mesmerism. Everything you see, everything your senses tells you, those are erroneous conclusions you come to. And if you react to them, you must suffer accordingly. This is the way of the world. An example. I've known a person, and so have you, who loves trees. They just love trees. And they hear about the rainforest being destroyed. They hear about lumberjacks in Northern California cutting down too many trees. This disturbs them. They become activists and fight for their rights, the rights of the trees. This is very commendable. This sounds reasonable. But I tell you in truth, the trees do not need your help. Things of this nature have been going on since the beginning of time. And yet if you help, that's good. Sounds like a contradiction. But it's not. As long as your body activates your mind, believing that your body and mind are real, you have to stick up for causes. For you also believe the causes are real. It is only when you understand through experience that the world is like a dream. Not just say this in words, but you actually have the experience that the world is a dream. If you are in a dream, and someone was telling you we're cutting down the rainforest, it's terrible, join our organization, and let's put a stop to this, what would you do? Would you join the organization? Would you become an activist? Wouldn't you laugh? Wouldn't you say, this is a dream? Why are you going through all this trouble? It's not really happening. No trees are being cut down. And of course the other person wouldn't insist. They would prove to you that they're being cut down. Yet there would be no way for you to explain to this person that the whole thing is a dream. The person wouldn't accept that. For they are witnessing with their senses the reality called the world. What can you do? Now you see the Yani's predicament. People come to the Yani all day long and tell him their troubles. They're so serious about their problems. They're so real to them that the Yani has to cry with them and have compassion. But the Yani is experiencing the fact that it's a dream world that the observer is seeing. And the observer of the dream world is totally identified with that world. Whatever the Yani says will make no difference. This is true of everything in your life. Think of what is going on in your life. The things that are so real to you. The things that you feel, and that you worry about, that you become upset over. Of course you feel justified, for you are living the mortal dream. Therefore, when you see the Yani personally, the Yani will never make fun of you and tell you you're dreaming. This is not reality. One day you will awaken and be free. That sounds like a cop-out. So the Yani listens and responds accordingly. Yet you must come to the same conclusion through experience. You must not believe the word the Yani tells you. You must have your own experience to get back to the question again. Why should I become self-realized? Why shouldn't I enjoy the world and live a hedonistic existence? The first reason is that everything changes. When you live in the dream world, everything changes. You grow up with certain friends, then you move, and you're totally upset. You go to a new city, a new state. You have to make other friends. Then you get a good job. You buy a beautiful home. Your home burns down. You lose everything you've ever had. You inherit $1 million. All of your relatives are at your door. Before you know it, there's nothing left. And you're in the worst position you've ever been. Can't you see everything goes from one state to another state? Everything continuously changes. When you are on the path to liberation, one of the first things that you experience is the removal of fear. all fear leaves you. And when there's nothing to fear, there's nothing to fight. You simply have a chip on your shoulder and you react to life negatively because you fear. There's some deep embedded fear in your subconscious. You may not be aware of it, but you have a deep fear and you react by having a chip on your shoulder and you're always ready to fight life. As you inquire, to whom does this fear come? As you begin to see that the fear belongs to the personal I and not to you, the fear begins to become weaker and weaker and weaker. The fear begins to flee as you self-inquire, as you ask, to whom does the fear come? As you continue on the path to self-realization, the next quality that happens to you, that comes to you, is a feeling of great peace. You've lost fear, and now you become peaceful. You become very peaceful. The world, things, ceases to disturb you. There's no reason why you feel peace. In other words, things have really not changed dramatically in your life. You're still aware of man's inhumanity to man. You still see all of the dastardly things on television that used to cause upset inside of you. You used to become upset something awful. And now for some reason you no longer become upset. People used to look at you the wrong way. You were ready to fight. You would always find some fault someplace. You'd go to a restaurant and you'd always believe the waitress or the waiter is cheating you. You go to a supermarket at the checkout stand. You count everything you bought. You're afraid of being cheated. All that stops. The fear is gone, and you feel peaceful. You have a deep conviction that nobody wants to hurt you. The feeling that there are people in the world who still can cheat you, mug you, rob you, disappears. Even though those people may still exist, but you have risen. You have risen. You no longer feel these things. You feel an unalloyed peace. For no reason. That has nothing to do with person, place, and thing. the next quality that comes to you on the path of self-realization is happiness. Something within you is always happy. This doesn't mean that you're laughing all the time, or you always have to have a smile on your face. That's just another appearance we put on. You just feel happy for no reason whatsoever. Eventually, as you continue on the path, you feel a bliss that is beyond understanding. The world can no longer hurt you. You haven't come to 100% conclusion that the world doesn't exist. But for some reason, you feel that the world can no longer hurt you. And you feel blissful all the time. Other people cannot see this. You want to share it with them, but you cannot. You can only point the way to self-inquiry. As you continue on the path, and you go deeper and deeper, the peace, the happiness, the bliss become transcendent. You become the self. You become the substratum of all existence. You function as consciousness, yet you appear to people as a body. Your form becomes a transmitter for divine grace to those mature disciples and devotees who are ready to receive it. But you are doing nothing. You are not saying that I am something and I transmit something. If you make a statement like that, there is still somebody left who believes they are a transmitter. There's no one to transmit anything. Yet it appears to happen that way. So you see, there is a good reason to want to awaken from the mortal dream. You will become totally free. And you will experience joy that cannot be explained. Now let's talk about you. How do you start? By letting go of all your problems. All those things that have been hounding you. All those things you love so much, mentally letting them go and inquiring to whom do they come. Inquiring to whom do they come. Realizing they come to me, I feel these things, I feel hurt, I feel slighted, I feel upset, yet I am not I. Then who is I? Where did the I come from that feels upset, that feels out of sorts? You do not answer that query, but you feel that the I carries the weight of the problem, not you. As you continue to do this day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, who knows? You never know when it may happen. But one day, the eye will disappear into the heart during your waking state. And you will see your omnipresence with your spiritual eye. You will feel a joy, a happiness that's beyond understanding. You will be firm. Questions.
Does self-inquiry remove the sanskaras that are veiling the self?
Self-inquiry itself does not remove anything. But as you keep practicing, and the more you know the truth, the less samskaras come back to you. Samskaras, karma, are for those who look at the external world as real. When you become introverted, there are no samskaras. When you become introverted, there's no world. There's no karma. Karma, reincarnation, samskaras, all for the extroverted person. It's really amusing when you went to school, they wanted you to become an extrovert. They wanted you to be outgoing. But now you're beginning to understand that the more outgoing you are, the more worldly you are, the more earthbound you become. As you practice self-inquiry, and you begin to focus on the self, then the samskaras are destroyed. It's the focusing on the self on the heart center that destroys the samskaras. Self-inquiry itself does not do that. It is the method to destroy them. The method you use to find the self. And it's only when the mind dies to the self that samskaras are destroyed.
So the samskaras are in the mind, and as long as we're not focused in the mind, but we're focused in consciousness, then they're not effective anymore.
This is true. For when there is no I left, when the I thought has been destroyed, for whom are samskaras? Samskaras are just for the I. No I, no samskaras.
As long as we're talking about this, I'm reading Sri Ramana Remembrances, and they talk a lot about the illnesses and other things that Sri Ramana went through. It's hard for me to understand why he went through those things, and I was wondering what you could talk about it.
Of course. You answered your own question. It's hard for you to understand. Who are you? As long as you believe you're a human, you're going to observe sickness, and you're going to observe things of this world. But when you transcend your self, your little self, and you begin to feel the reality, in the reality there's only perfection. No one is born, no one is sick, and no one dies. Consciousness is the only power. Nothing else exists. So when we see Ramana dying, we're seeing our own state of consciousness. We're seeing where we're coming from. Ramana never thought he was dying. He never believed he was dying. To him there was no death. There was no transition. There was no change from life to death, and then you're made whole in death. To Ramana, life and death were one. There was no doubt about that. There was no duality. There was no sick body to become well. There was only the one. And you are that one. But as long as you're living through your senses, you will observe life and death, and you will come to conclusions. That's why it's so necessary to work on yourself and raise yourself higher and higher until the body is totally destroyed and mind. The mind-body is totally obliterated. Then there's only absolute awareness. Nirvana. And in that state there is no death.
So just to pursue it a little bit further, you were talking about making an analogy about dreaming about trees, and when somebody would ask you, you know, you want to do something about trees, being awakened, you would just smile, knowing there were no trees. And so Ramana allowed himself to be put through a number of arduous treatments and stuff.
Yes.
What purpose is that?
Well, the purpose of his devotees.
The purpose was what?
The purpose for his devotees. If he was by himself living in the cave, he would just sit there and lie there. smiling. But his devotees were so insistent. They wanted to preserve the body. That he allowed them to enjoy themselves. It gave them pleasure to do this. So he allowed it to happen. But he didn't do it because of anything that was in him. He was above all that. It was only for the pleasure of his devotees.
If in the book they make a claim that Ramana was not experiencing what his devotees were perceiving.
Of course not. If he perceived what they were perceiving, he would be like one of them. He was beyond all of that.
Why would he give in to their ignorance instead of awakening them from it?
He didn't give in to their ignorance. He just allowed it to happen.
Why?
For the same reason that he allowed his body to appear to be real. For the same reason his body took a walk and ate breakfast. I went through all kinds of experiences. Why? That's the appearance.
Yeah, that keeps them, his devotees, in their illusion.
It makes them, at the present time, the state that they're in, it makes them feel a little better. They realize that they cannot all be enlightened at the same time.
But their feeling better is keeping them in their illusion.
Not necessarily.
Their feeling better keeps them in their illusion as long as that's going on. But they're able to see the attitude of Bhagavan. And they're able to see where he's coming from. And that the illness does not affect them. It causes them to awaken to a greater extent. But the appearance is that he was suffering and they're taking care of him. This is the appearance of the body. He can only be himself. So he couldn't really awaken them if they were not ready to be awakened. They were where they were and he was where he was. And just like when you talk about the Guru's grace, only those who are mature students can receive it. So those who are mature devotees were able to see the truth about Bhagavan. Not all of them reacted like that.
Then they wouldn't want to have things done to try to cure it. So.
They were not interested in that. There were many devotees that just watched. And they didn't get involved in that. Only the devotees that were not spiritually high took care of all those things.
Well, what I don't get is why he would give in to them and let things be done to his body, which he had no interest in.
Because of a great compassion.
That compassion?
Of course.
Keeps them asleep.
Not really. When they see what happened, after it was over, many of them had an awakening. They were able to see the folly of all that. But while it's going on, they have to participate. They're just like if you were driving your car and you saw somebody being hit by a car and no one was there. Would you drive by and say it's not happening? And not care about the person being hit? You would stop your car and render aid to the best of your ability, but you would know the truth. You would still render aid. So how would it look if all the disciples and the devotees were watching Ramana waste away and they were all laughing and playing cards and saying, oh, this is not happening. They haven't gotten to that state. So they have to do what they have to do. And the man has to do what he has to do. Remember the story I just told once about a scorpion? About this master sitting by a pond, watching the scorpion swim across, and when it was nearly drowned, they would pick it up and put it back on the shore. Then he would watch it swim across. When it was nearly drowned, he'd pick it up and put it back on the shore. And a wanderer came by and saw this and said, "Master, what are you doing?" And the master replied, "Is the scorpion's dharma to try to swim across, and it's my dharma to try to save him." So it's the dharma of those devotees to take care of Bhagavan the way he did. And it's the dharma of Bhagavan to allow it to happen.
Even if it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. Existence doesn't make any sense.
No.
But it appears to be so.
May I ask you a question?
Of course. That's why I'm here.
I'll make it sound repeat. What this young man wants to know, what most of us would like to know. Like when a person has cancer or many of these diseases of the body, the worst thing about it is often the discomfort and the pain.
Mm.
So if I'm sitting here in pain and I just took my pain pill, which I actually did, or I need to be around people so I don't feel the pain, or I have to talk because so I won't feel the pain, then what is the best thing that we mundane people who haven't reached much of a spirituality to not feel the pain can do?
You can only feel the pain, but you can observe it also.
Now that was the second question I was going to ask. If you say that he stays in a cancerous state, and someone else would say, "Well, why? I mean, this is ridiculous." And you say, "For the devotee, because they need to experience this, and they have sometimes been enlightened afterwards." I think most of us would say that, or know that, it's only through suffering, or through pain, or travail, that we learn to have compassion for other people and for the human state. And then at the same time, you'll say, "Well, that's almost like a self-canceling vacillation, because you shouldn't really be concerned about what the other people out there are feeling, say, of the car accident. Be concerned with yourself." So is this something that a guru or advanced man can show with a cancerous body to his devotees? Is there something they should learn to know about suffering or the human state, so that they can realize that it's not important? That we're, I guess it's what you're saying.
It is important when you're going through it. As long as you're going through it and you're feeling it, then it's important to you. You're not supposed to imagine it doesn't exist, when in fact it does. Therefore, you're supposed to do everything you can to alleviate the pain from yourself. If you have to take pain pills, or if you have to go to a doctor, you do whatever is necessary at the time. But you can always realize that it is your body that is going through this, and not you. You have nothing to do with this, because you are not your body. You can do both at once. You can handle the pain the best way you can, and also keep realizing that you are not the body. That the pain is coming to you as I. It's attached to your I, your personal I. It is the I that suffers, not you. As you keep doing these things, you will notice that the pain becomes less and less. You're not feeling it so strongly. When you identify with the I, and you realize the I is going through the pain, then you suffer. But when you do not identify with the I, and you just observe and you watch, and you realize the I is going through the pain, not you, the suffering becomes bearable. You will not stop suffering because it's attached to your body and you believe in your body so strongly. but it will become bearable, and you will suffer less and less. We're not trying to say that suffering does not exist. That would be idiotic to the person who's experiencing the suffering. We are saying that there are those beings that are called yanis that have transcended the world, the universe, and everything thereof. And there is no suffering to those people. Yet others see them suffer. The suffering is apparent to others who are not in that state. Therefore, you must not be judgmental, because when you speak, you're speaking about the state that you're in, and you have no idea of the state of the yoni. You all look so serious. It's not serious, it's a joke. Everything that has happened to you since your birth has been predetermined. It is only when you realize that you were never born and you become introverted and go within that all that stops. But as long as you are living in this world as a human being, everything is preordained. Only when you rise in consciousness by diving deep within yourself do you transcend preordination. The truth is, no one is preordained. It doesn't exist. But as long as you believe you're the body, it does exist. Because the body has lived before and before and before, and will continue to live again and again and again. As long as the belief of the body exists in you, when that belief is destroyed, who is left to be preordained? What is left to be preordained? All that becomes redundant. Do you follow me?
Yes, in a way, but it seems like it's a process, and I think I heard you say that you can awaken in a flash, not today.
Yes.
But it seems to me like it's taken a long time for me to awaken. And I guess that's part of the illusion, too. I don't know. It seems like a process. And if I can't give up my belief in the body all at once, does that mean karma and preordination is lessens as the process goes on?
Or? As long as the process goes on, free recognition exists.
In the same way?
It is only when you go within and transcend the ego and the body that free recognition ceases to be.
Sometimes they have flashes of knowing those things, but then, you know, the world comes in again.
As you continue with the practice, the flashes will expand and the world will contract. Forget about time. Just continue practicing.
May I ask another question?
Of course.
Yes, well, maybe when the spirit moves. Last time I was here 3 weeks ago, they were selling me a book that had been theorized, I Am the Self. And one of the students of Ramana, I will not try to say the name, and the young woman who was a disciple of him. And in this is telling about the disciple who was lying on the floor with the poisonous snakes and the rats. And that one of the rats had died. Or the rat would come and sit on his knee, or lap or knee, and he would laugh like it was in a bliss state like he was. And he felt that when the rat died, passed away, that it had received the self. And in the image, after it was expired, there was like three baby rats dancing. And I know in the Hindu philosophy, they believe in metempsychosis, or like an atavism of a reversion possibly to a lower self.
Transmigration.
Huh?
Transmigration,
yeah. That's another question. But most people that are in metaphysical concepts do not believe that the human body ever reverts to a lower existence. And there's also the use, I guess, of a monkey who he feels that he is known in a prior existence, who is a person. And this would be very anathema to many people's belief systems, because they do believe only that we evolve forward, never backwards.
So what's the question?
Which is right? Or that are both exist?
None are right and both are right. Do not go along with your belief system.
Well, I find that hard to believe, but I mean, if this is a student of this one, then why is that written?
This is the reason why I say so often when I start the class. Do not believe anything I say. In this world, anything is possible. Yet what difference does it make? What you should do is to work on yourself. Read the books, if you like. Take it with a grain of salt. Who made that expression up?
Morton.
You're not asked to accept everything you read.
Well, I don't. But you figure if someone is that evolved, then they should know the difference between fool's folly and something that has the truth.
You're judging.
That's a judgment, yeah.
Find out who you are. And when you discover your own reality, then you understand that. But people assume to have all kinds of experiences. Look at all the experiences Yogananda went through in the autobiography of a yogi and other books. There are many stories, there are many books. Some stories are true, some are false. But never mind that. See who you are. work on yourself and don't pay attention to all those things.
It's like, what's the difference between a true dream and a false dream? They're both dreams.
They're both dreams. See, it appears to me that you have a very strong belief system. You're always saying this is right and this is wrong.
I don't really feel that way.
I believe this, I don't believe that. It shouldn't make any difference. Just read it and say, that's interesting. And work on yourself.
The mind always seems to resist consciousness, and it's always looking for its happiness somewhere else. So when will the mind realize that if it rests in consciousness, that someday that happiness will come over it?
When you stop paying attention to it. The less attention you give to your mind, the more it will subside. Do not give your mind power. Do not believe that your mind is very powerful and it can cause you pain and all sorts of obstructions. Ask yourself, to whom is the mind? The point is always to be aware of who you really are. Identify with your source. Do not give the mind any credit or any value or any power by believing it's strong and it's hard to overcome. Rather, go beyond the mind and find out how the mind arose and to who it arose. And then you'll become free.
Is there such a thing as a mind, an entity? We speak of it as though there was a mind, but there is no mind.
That's what I was saying. The mind doesn't exist.
No.
The mind is only a bundle of thoughts.
No.
When you slow the mind down, it means you slow the thoughts down.
No thoughts, no mind.
Exactly. The mind doesn't exist, neither does the body. Neither does the world. Or the universe. They're all out of the mind. And the mind is really the personal I. So when you follow the personal I back to the source, the mind goes nice and open.
So we are always using the mind as a reference point to find the truth. And that's why we never find it from that point of view.
Because we believe in the mind. We think the mind is very strong and we have to fight to destroy it. It will never be destroyed if you feel that. You have to become neutral. And not fight the so-called mind. But observe it, watch it, and follow it back to its source.
Mind has to somehow become convinced that there is something greater than the mind.
Not really. You don't want to convince the mind of anything. You want to destroy it, to annihilate it. The more you try to convince your mind, the more power it will have over you. That's why you have to inquire, to whom comes the mind? And you'll always go back to the I thought. Follow the I thought to the source, the mind will go. Would you like to read the Annie Mary?
Yes.
Now listen to this carefully. This is your true nature. This is what you really are.
For a Yani who has realized the identity of his inner being with the infinite Brahman, there is no rebirth, no migration, not even liberation, for he is already liberated. He has firmly established in an experience of the absolute existence, knowledge, bliss, the Satchitananda Atman. The continued existence of the world and of his own body appears to the Yani only as an illusion, the appearance of which he cannot remove, but which cannot further deceive him, till the time when, after the decease of the body, he wanders not forth but remains where he is and what he is, and eternally was, the first principle of all beings and things, the original, eternal, pure, free Brahman. While living, and even when the body falls dead, the Yani rests in his own essential nature, his own Svarupa, that is all full, all pure, timeless consciousness and bliss. The following assertions made by a Yani constitute his own deepest convictions and experience. I am infinite, imperishable, self-luminous, self-existent. I am beginningless, endless, decayless, birthless, deathless. Never was I born. I am ever free, perfect, independent. I alone am. I pervade the entire universe. I am all permeating and interpenetrating. I am supreme peace and freedom, absolute. A Yani lives forever. He has attained life everlasting. Cravings torture him not. Sins stain him not. Birth and death touch him not. He is free from all craving and longing. He ever rests in his own Satchitananda Svarupa. He sees the one infinite self in all, and all in the infinite self, which is his being. He remains forever as the infinite self of consciousness and delight.
Yeah.
picture of the...
You know, put the donation in for Robert. Why don't you do that? I'd love to have one.
Would you? All right. And
sure.
The donations all go to Robert. If you want one.
You can
make it
back
the whole
thing, you know, out of the night and all of the rooms.
I guess the glass is not shut at all.
It's been a pleasure being with you again. I love you all. God bless you. Thank you for coming. Remember to love yourself, to worship yourself, to pray to yourself, because God dwells in you as you. Peace.
Thank you.
Until we meet again, you can go home now.